This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back to the third hour of our program. In our first hour, Senator Jeff Merkley came on and talked about how he's not going to run for president and why and what we have to be doing. And we had a debate with Julio Rivera about holding corporations to account. And in our second hour, we, you know, went through a whole lot of those issues. When will the the oppressed majority of Americans who actually want things like higher taxes on rich people and strengthening of Social Security and Medicare and 83% strong net neutrality, 71%, 92% want Medicare to negotiate lower drug prices, for example. When are we going to get this stuff? You know, how do we overcome the wholesale ownership of our politicians by the billionaire, the right-wing billionaire class and the corporate so-called persons? I'd like to kind of expand that in a way that this whole argument, it kind of flows out of the whole frame of all these things, into an historic vote that was just held in, as I recall, Ohio. Tish O'Dell is on the line with us. She's the Ohio organizer, with CELDEF, the Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund. The website celdef.org, and an OHCRN board member, which is the Ohio, Ohio version of. Well, what is OHCRN, Tish?
Yeah, hi, Tom. Yeah, it's the Ohio Community Rights Network.
Great. Okay, thank you. So tell me what you all did, and by the way, your Twitter handle is M-A-D-I-O-N Mom, Madion Mom, or Madion Mom, and tell me what happened here. Lake Erie.
The people were like fed up, and they said, you know what? Our government and our laws are not reflecting our values and what we need. And in Toledo, actually, in 2014, they suffered loss of their water, and not just drinking water. I mean, they couldn't drink it, so it wasn't like a boil alert or anything. They couldn't touch their drinking or the water at all. So no clothes washing, no washing dishes, you know, nothing at all.
So the water was still coming out of the faucet, but it was essentially poisonous?
Yeah, it was. They said, do not touch it, don't use it, don't shower in it. So for 3 days. There's an algae problem with Lake Erie. And we know a lot of the issues. I mean, it's obviously Lake Erie's polluted and under threats from many different corporate activities and industrial activities. But in northwest Ohio, where Toledo is, it has to do a lot with big ag, so corporate agriculture and a lot of their runoff. We're talking about big CAFO farms, you know, that kind of
thing.
What's a
CAFO farm?
And this algae problem had been growing and growing. It came to this head in 2014. Lake Erie's actually the shallowest of the Great Lakes.
Right. Right. Well, and I remember when Lake Erie basically died back in the 60s or 70s. And what's a CAFO farm?
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that people bring that up to me, and I say, yeah, but sometimes we can kill nature and can't bring it back. You know, we were fortunate that time. Right. Sometimes you can kill a lake or a stream, and it's not able to bring it back. Money won't revive it.
Yeah. So the thing that you all and the people working with you put on the ballot, this was if my recollection is correct, this was a citizens' initiative, this was a ballot initiative, was to give Lake Erie essentially personhood rights, the rights that, at the very least, a corporation has. Do I have that right?
Yeah, basically. I mean, I'd like to think that, you know, we don't equate everything with personhood, but in our legal system, that's kind of, because obviously a lake isn't going to have the same rights and needs that people have. But right. Yeah, just since we did give corporations personhood rights, I guess that's the best way we can describe it at this point. And the people did try to work through the government for 2 years, so 2014 to 16, and got absolutely nowhere, no relief, no solutions to the problem that they felt would help, you know, curb this from happening again. So that's why in 2016, we just happened to be, Thomas Lindsay and myself, doing a tour through various Ohio cities talking about community rights and rights of nature, and some of the folks that are in the Toledo group happened to hear that. Mm-hmm. And so the timing was just right. They came up to us and said, you know, how can we use rights of nature to protect Lake Erie and our community here in Toledo? And so that's how it all started. And so for 2 years, yes, they collected signatures. It was supposed to be on the November ballot, but the opposition fought to keep it off the ballot, and the Supreme Court helped with that process. But the people kept pushing and fighting, and we actually did get on the special election ballot last Tuesday, and it passed by 61%.
Wow. And this is the city of Toledo, right?
In the city of Toledo,
yeah.
Yes.
So what does this, we're talking with Tish O'Dell, the CELDEF and OHCRN board member and organizer, or organizer and board member, respectively. So Lake Erie has now, Toledo, Ohio has recognized that Lake Erie has rights.
Exactly.
What does that, and Lake Erie has been polluted so badly that for 3 days the citizens in Toledo couldn't even touch their water because of these CAFO, these concentrated agricultural farming operations, these giant hog farms and chicken farms and whatnot, pouring god-awful amounts of waste and pollution into the lake, which are nutrients for the algae that produces the poison that was poisoning the water in Toledo. So in practical terms, what does this mean, what you guys have accomplished?
Right. Well, so you have talked extensively about corporate rights, and so what happens is the corporations, you know, go to the court and say our rights are being violated. So now this law says Lake Erie has rights, so the people can act on behalf of the lake to bring a lawsuit to actually hold the polluters accountable. So, you know, just like, so we had a case in Ecuador, the Vilcabamba River, you know, and so we're hoping that we'll see a case where it's Lake Erie versus whoever, you know, the polluters may be,
right,
saying their rights are being violated.
Does that, because this did not get passed at the statewide level, this was just in Toledo, does that mean that to have standing, it would have to be just a citizen of Toledo or the city of Toledo, or, and could the state courts say, you know, okay, fine, you can control, I'm assuming parts of Toledo have lake frontage on Lake Erie, that you can control that area where, you know, is in front of you, but you can't control the rest of the, I mean, what are the limits on this?
Right. I mean, Toledo sits right on Lake Erie, and it's the Maumee River is where a lot of the big industrial agriculture is taking place. And they dump into the Maumee River that flows into Lake Erie, so it goes through Toledo. You know, the solutions always are to make the people pay, right? Upgrade your water treatment plants and facilities, even though they're not the ones that caused the pollution in the first place. You know, so that's kind of what the theory is behind this. And we understand, you know, trying to work at the state level is very difficult, very hard. People don't even understand rights of nature. We were, I guess, totally surprised by the amount of media attention this gained worldwide.
Mm-hmm.
Just the fact that they had it and put it on the ballot and then passed it. So it's actually the first in the United States law passed by the people to recognize a specific body of water and ecosystem.
That's great. Wait, can you educate us a little bit about the rights of nature?
Sure. I mean, that's what we're basically talking about, is seeing nature as a living entity and being that actually sustains our lives, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that we have to protect it and give it rights. So, you know, I try to explain it to people when you think about it. We, in our culture and system and all that, we look at rights as kind of, I guess, the baseline of, you know, where you can even get into court or argue for them. So I tell people, like, back in slave times, like, a slave couldn't have gone to the courts and said, hey, my master's violating my rights.
Right.
Or a woman before, you know, the 1920s or whatever.
Or a woman in Saudi Arabia today.
Exactly. Yeah. Can't go to the courts and say my husband is violating my rights,
right,
you know, to life, to exist, because they don't exist anywhere. So it's
right,
kind of the same thing with nature right now. Nature in our system and structure of law isn't recognized as having any rights. It's looked at as strictly property that can be used, exploited, all for profit. And we have a system of regulation where we regulate the harm to nature. And we've been living that way for almost five decades now, and what we're living with is the consequence of slowly regulating harm. So it's not about prohibiting it, you know, it's about we're going to let it be destroyed, you know, harmed, whatever, but at a slow, regulated pace. And this is about prohibiting the harm. So in other words, the lake has rights, and what you're doing is violating its right to exist, thrive, flourish.
So in places where people who are listening to this program right now live, where they may have, you know, a local piece of nature that's being destroyed, whether it's a melting glacier, whether it's a forest that's under attack from loggers or beetles, whether it's a body of water that's being contaminated, whether it's an aquifer. We've got, we just had this report yesterday in the New York Times, over 250 coal-fired power plants have now been confirmed. 9 out of 10 of them are contaminating the groundwater of their local communities with cancer-causing compounds that are measurable in the groundwater and thus in the tap water. If they wanted to assert that there was a right to the natural system, the ecosystem around them that is being damaged by these things, what should they do? Where do they start?
Well, first of all, you have to change the minds of people, right? In our culture, we a lot of people think this is unusual, right? What are you talking about? Because we haven't been brought up to believe that nature has rights. And so first thing is education. You have to educate the public about this. And there's other countries in the world that have recognized this for a while, like Ecuador. They've put it in their constitution, Bolivia, New Zealand. So there's many other places around the globe that are recognizing this, right? And I think we all know, too, that the indigenous people have believed this.
Oh, this has been part of their culture and their religion. But in the little less than a minute we have left, it seems to me like the starting point, and I've spent a lot of time on the CELDEF website, would be to go to CELDF, the Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund, CELDEF.org, and read up on this, learn how it can be done, and open a local chapter or some variation thereof. Am I off base on that?
No, that's totally right. Educate yourself. We have a tab specifically on the website, Rights of Nature. So go there, and yes, and please share it, because obviously, you know, the media doesn't always cover these movements by the people, and this is a movement for change and change law, culture, all of it. Yeah. So, yeah, please share.
Well, and you had over 60% of the people in Toledo voting for this. Was there? Did the big animal farms that are polluting the lake, that you know, thus violating its rights, did they fight back in a big way with an advertising campaign against it?
Oh, they had a huge advertising campaign. And then they also, last Wednesday, so the morning after it passed, we've already been hit with a lawsuit.
Wow. Amazing. Tish O'Dell, the CELDEF Ohio organizer and the OHCRN board member, CELDEF.org, OhioCRN.org are the websites. Maddie and Mom, you can tweet her, or at CELDEF. Tish, thanks a lot for dropping by.
Thanks a lot, Tom.
Good talking with you. We'll be back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
We'll be back with more of the news of the day and your calls in just a moment. Stick around. And welcome back. Tom in Seattle. Hey, Tom. Thanks for listening to KBCS. What's up?
Hi. Can you hear me?
I hear you just fine. What's up?
Well, I had an idea about potentially trying to flip the fossil fuel debate on its head.
Okay.
Got a lot of ideas, but basically, what would you think, thought of this last night after a couple of whiskeys, but what would you think of basically, I mean, for 150 years we've been enjoying all this power that the, you know, coal industry and everybody else has been supplying us, and I think if we could, you know, make them feel appreciated, we might be able to garner a lot more support. For instance, like if we, if you take somebody that's been in the industry for 20 years, they're a lifer, they're planning to, you know, retire, give that miner an early retirement and essentially, you know, okay, you're done. You've contributed. Thank you very much. We're going to make you feel good for it. You know, if you've only been in the industry for a couple years, maybe we give you a year or two of additional, you know, whatever your paycheck was, and make them feel like, okay, we've got a little transition time. We feel good about it. We can actually, you know, I mean, I don't know if you can do that with the CEOs.
Well, I think you start out by getting these coal companies to stop stealing their employees' pension funds.
Well, that, okay. I mean, we could, what do you think of the idea, basically? I don't know what it would take to essentially pay him off, but I mean, basically.
Well, it's essentially what Hillary Clinton was arguing for in the last election. She was, you know, after that comment that she made that, you know, the age of coal is over, got, you know, widely distributed and distorted by Donald Trump to say that she was, you know, calling to lay off all coal miners and he was going to embrace the coal miners. You know, she came out and said, No, what we need to do is we need to catch these people. We need a social safety net to catch them. Over the short term, we need to be providing them with income, housing, health care, things like that. And most importantly, we need to be providing them with some education so that they can, figure out how to have a living without, the challenges that they're facing.
Yeah, well, I think if they feel supported and they feel, they're gonna take care of us here. That's the major pushback is these workers don't know what they're gonna do. That's all they know,
right,
as far as
industry. Well, in fact, I think that's where AOC's Green New Deal comes in. I mean, West Virginia has a lot of sunlight. It's technically a southern state, or arguably, it's right there on the border. And, certainly way south latitude-wise of Germany. And so, there's a lot of sunlight and there's a lot of wind. You got a lot of hills, and small mountains, basically, in West Virginia. And you could turn West Virginia into a massive net energy producer and exporter. And, I'm not sure that Hillary Clinton's program was quite as, expansive as I'm characterizing, but certainly Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's is. And I would go into those areas and say, instead of getting black lung disease, wouldn't you rather have clean air, clean water, no more pollution, and a damn good job? I mean, the fastest growing job in the United States right now is solar installer. The number two is wind technician. Those are the two fastest growing jobs in the United States. We should be bringing those to places like West Virginia and Eastern Ohio and Southern Pennsylvania. Tom, thank you. Oh, welcome back. Hank in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Hey, Hank, what's on your mind today?
Hey, so I've been hearing a lot about how Republicans or conservatives tend to think, we can't pay for the Green New Deal, or we can't pay for this giant one-payer healthcare system. And I'm kind of concerned about that, because every time Democrats get into power and have a chance to put forward their ideas, they're always howling to the moon about the deficits that they've put into the...
Right, it's Jude Winiski's two Santa Claus theory, yeah.
Yeah, so...
Hank, can you get your mouth closer to the microphone, please? It sounds like you're sitting in the bottom of a tunnel.
Sorry. Yeah, so... The thing that concerns me is if they're really concerned about balancing the budget, maybe it would have been great if they didn't give out all these tax cuts over the past
40 years.
You know how many years that they've been years.
Yeah. Going back to Reagan, yep.
So, honestly, if they're so concerned about that, they can really just start shelling back all that money. I mean...
Yep.
Back when...
Don't just roll back the Trump tax cuts and the Bush tax cuts. Roll back the Reagan tax cuts.
Yeah.
Take us back to prosperity-level taxation. And that's what I would call it, prosperity level. Yeah. We had incredible prosperity in the United States in the 1950s, the 1960s, the 1970s, the 90s. The 1970s were a prosperous decade, and even the first couple of years of the 1980s. And it wasn't all just because we had destroyed Europe and we were rebuilding them. In fact, that really, you can only make that argument, I would say, for the first few years of the 1950s. It was because we had a top tax rate of 74 to 91%.
And the reason they talk about the Green New Deal as on to another extension of the New Deal was because it's putting a bunch of money into the economy. And the reason we weren't so concerned about breaking the system back then was we didn't have this giant deficit looming over us.
Right. But see, even with the deficit, these are the kind of things that generate more money than they cost over time. These are not expenses. These are investments. And this is the thing that Republicans refuse to talk about, and I think in some cases just don't even understand, literally don't understand. These are investments, just like building schools are investments, just like putting people through college are investments. Building out a solar infrastructure and a wind-based infrastructure, and where appropriate, a geothermal or a tide-based energy infrastructure, all of those things, yes, they're going to cost money on the front end, but over time, you're going to get so many dollars back. For every dollar you invest, you're going to get $10, $20, $50, $100 back in additional tax revenue that you wouldn't have had otherwise as a result of the economy. economic growth that they're going to stimulate. So, yeah, I'm with you. Hank, thank you. Jerry in St. Peter's, Missouri. Hey, Jerry, just a minute to the break. What's up?
Hey, Tom, I want to thank you for the last hours of Agent Sunlight. You sent that to me for a donation I gave you.
Oh, my pleasure.
Excellent book. Everybody ought to read it.
Thank you.
My situation is I've had solar panels for 4 years now. Seems as though my Republican majority legislative body here in Missouri wants to now tax me because the utility is no longer making enough money.
Oh, really?
Now, didn't we used to have a public utility? I mean,
about half the electricity in America is created by public-owned utilities, and about half is created by private for-profit utilities, which apparently is one of yours.
Yeah, and they told us that privatization is the only way to go. They want to do that with education now and everything else.
Right.
Well, I'm telling you, it's failing, and they now want to overtax us.
Yeah.
Pay for their profit.
Sure, they want to. Yeah, let's have the ratepayers and the taxpayers subsidize the for-profit private energy companies. It's happening all over the country, Jerry, and particularly weirdly in the places where they're most aggressive about it, Hawaii and Florida, making it hard to do solar, which is bizarre. Jerry, thanks a lot for the call.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
Back with more of your calls and the news of the day right after this. It's the Tom Hartman Program, occupying the media 3 hours a day, 5 days a week, right here. Welcome back. 34 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Program, helping you in the water cooler wars. Speaking of which, Jonathan in Brooklyn, New York, listening to WBAI, is on the line. Hey, Jonathan, what's up?
Hi, Tom. So you spoke the last half hour. You gave your time to say how great the Green New Deal is. So I will have just one simple question. How much is the Green New Deal going to cost for the American taxpayers? You know how much that's going to be?
Nobody knows that, Jonathan, because the specifics of the Green New Deal have not been identified. What is before Congress right now is a resolution, not a law. It is a resolution that says if we all agree that it would be a good idea to transition from a fossil fuel-based economy to a renewable-based economy, then let's get started. And if that resolution was passed, that would be the basis for Congress to start holding hearings where they bring in experts who say, okay, well, here's what it'll cost to solarize, here's what it would cost to use wind, here's the parts of the country where it's practical. Yeah, you bring in economists who would say, well, here's how you deal with the tax structure around it, here's how you deal with the existing incentive, phase out the existing incentives for fossil fuels and phase in, incentives for Green New Deals, things like that. I mean, it all would have to be worked out before Congress. Anybody who says that they know what the Green New Deal is, Jonathan, is lying to you.
Yeah, but even Alexandria Cortez, even she said that it's true that the Green New Deal is going to cost $93 trillion. That's an honest.
I have not heard her say that. And I don't believe that she said that. You know, I'm sorry, I just don't believe that she would say that. Nobody knows what it's going to cost. And by the way, it's not a cost. Nobody knows how big the investment's going to be, and nobody knows how long it's going to take to get a return. Jonathan, you need to get your facts straight. Jerry in Federal Way, Washington. Hey, Jerry, what's up?
Thanks for taking my call, Tom. I should have called earlier when you was talking about the CEOs walking away from bankruptcy with fat pockets.
Yeah.
I happen to know of a man who was a sales manager for a worldwide sewing machine company in Japan. He was promoted to sales manager about 6 months before they went bankrupt. And when they went to the bankrupt judge in Japan, all the CEOs and important people had to donate their pension fund to the bankruptcy court.
Whoa.
In other words, in Japan, when a big company goes bankrupt, the CEOs suffer.
And what about the workers? Are they protected?
Well, I don't know about the workers. I just know of the individual who was the sales manager.
Right. You know about the executives.
Yes, and I thought, well, hey, they should do the same thing here because
they really should. Because what these guys do is they pay themselves millions of dollars and then they bankrupt the company, and they keep the money.
Sure.
I mean, this is what's happening at PGE. It's what may be happening with Purdue Pharma.
Yes.
Yeah, I would love to see, in 2005, This thing was sold as bankruptcy reform in quotes, and really it was just a, you know, it was on behalf of the banks, and it was a screw job for, on the average American, you know, person. And we need genuine bankruptcy reform. Jerry, thanks for that. That's a great anecdote. I didn't know about that. Jim in Lombard, Illinois, listening on Chicago's Progressive Talk. Hey, Jim, what's up?
Yeah, hi, Tom. I put solar panels on my house last year, and the biggest thing people don't realize is at any given time I'm generating enough electricity for, you know, three houses. So,
whoa.
You know, people don't. Not everyone needs to have solar panels. Not every business needs to have solar panels. You know,
it could be done on a community basis. I mean, if you take a train, when I visit Germany, the city that I, where my friends live, is, you know, way out to the east from Frankfurt. I fly into Frankfurt, and then I take a train for 4 hours. West to east across the country. And if I sit on the left side of the train, I'm looking north and I'm looking at roofs that are pointing south, which is where you put your solar panels. And the last time I was there a couple of years ago, it seemed that at least every other house was covered with solar panels. And in some areas it was more than that, some areas it was less than that, but it seemed like it was about half the houses. Now I don't know if that's just along that corridor with the railroad on it. I don't know how widespread that is across the country, if there's areas that are more or less, but it is so visible. It's remarkable.
Yeah, and to be quite honest, I can't even hardly see the panels on my roof. I mean, they're not really that noticeable.
Yeah.
But the other thing is it's only costing me $40 a month extra out of my pocket. So I'm paying for 7 years of electricity within 5 years.
So you're leasing these?
Know? No, I bought them.
Oh,
that's,
I see.
My payoff is 7 years.
I see.
So it's costing me an extra $40 a month out of my pocket. And the other thing is on my electric bill, it reduces the taxes I pay on my electric bill. So if you look at your electric bill, you know, you pay all these taxes. Well, it reduces my taxes.
Right.
So the 1 month I had a bill where I had credits, and it was $15 for meter charge and customer charge. I paid no taxes. I paid, you know, and not everyone needs to do this. You know, just as do what you can. You know, you don't have to spend as much as I did. And, if every person does the little bit that they can afford to do or the little bit that they can do, we all work together, you know, and it'll go quicker than people think.
Yeah, and we can get there. And I believe that California, I believe they actually passed this law. I could be wrong, but that all new housing construction in California has to be solar, that the houses have to have, you know, a substantial solar component. They certainly have incentives for it, you know, right now across the state, and I would love to see that go national.
I think I was reading that myself, about that.
I
don't remember where.
Yeah, I just, it's been a while, and that's why I'm not certain if it was a proposal or if it actually became law, but I'm pretty sure it became law. But we'll find out.
Yeah.
Jim, thanks a lot for the call.
Yeah,
I got to move along.
I'm an electrician, too. Okay.
Well, go ahead, Jim. You can finish your sentence.
Oh, yeah, I'm an electrician, so, I have a little expertise in this.
So you understand how it works and it just makes sense.
Yep.
There you go.
Exactly.
Okay, Jim, thanks a lot for the call. Patrick in Seaside, California. Hey, Patrick, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I realize that George Lakoff is probably one of the masters at framing and messaging, and I wanted to address climate change deniers, but before I do, we're seeing massive amounts of pollution going on. It's always been the case, but it's been accelerated under Trump. I think in his first few months, he signed a bill allowing the dumping of toxic sludge in rivers, ponds, and streams.
That's right.
We have fracking water being dumped in the Gulf of Mexico.
Yep.
I read what I thought was from a reliable progressive source a few months ago, that there are 4,000 Flint, Michigans around the country.
Yes.
Which makes me wonder if the Republican governor, the former governor of Michigan, is liable for negligent homicide. But my point is, I think the climate change deniers, especially the corporate entities and the billionaires, are using climate science denial as a distraction. I may be off the mark, way off the mark. I may be onto something. I think they're using it as a distraction to you know, basically say not only is climate science not real, but no longer is pollution. Pollution doesn't exist. I just feel like this is a subliminal message being sent out over the years. I don't know. I wanted to see what you thought of that. I think that's something we should address and message.
Yeah, there is this guy who Donald Trump just put on his science panel that's going to determine whether climate change is a problem or not, who is running around saying that carbon dioxide is food for plants, therefore it's a good thing, it's going to help agriculture. One of the things that we know, by the way, is that when CO2 levels go significantly above where they are right now, but even right now, yes, it's food for plants, and what it does is it causes them to grow faster but not stronger, and so they actually become weaker. And the vegetables and fruits have fewer nutrients because, you know, right now there's this kind of homeostasis that's been established over the last 10,000 years of the CO2 levels.
I just think that the denial is being used as an excuse to pollute more.
Yeah.
It reminds me of the Deep Purple lyric from the song No, No, No. Poison in the rain, but they say no, no, no. We ain't to blame. It ain't us.
Yeah, there you go. Well said, Patrick. Thanks a lot. Tony in Hudson, Florida. Hey, Tony, what's up?
Hey, how you doing? You know, you were talking about taxes earlier and how it's great to pay, you know, more. And I'm a well-off guy, and at the end of the year, I know I haven't paid enough because, you know, it's all over. All of the politicians say that the rich aren't paying enough. So I send a nice big fat check back to the Treasury. I'm just wondering why none of these, like, especially Pelosi, she's worth like $600 million. How come she doesn't pay more? I send a $500,000 check back to the Treasury, and I'm proud of doing that.
You do?
Well, sure, because they know better how to spend my money than me.
Yeah, right. Thanks a lot, Tony. Nice job, nice try, but it ain't going to fly. Gary in Arlington Heights, Illinois. Hey, Gary, what's on your mind?
Oh, Tom, do you remember when I was a couple of years ago, American Airlines, reorganized bankruptcy chapter 07 where you keep your name?
Right.
And everything. And they, even though they had $1 billion in the bank, and they said, I write on the news that in order for the company to maintain profitability, they had to get out some of their labor contracts.
Right. So this was to break their unions and steal their pensions.
There you go.
Yeah. Yeah. This is a trick that Carl Icahn, you know, pioneered with TWA back in the 80s, was it?
Right.
You know, whenever right after Reagan changed the pension rules,
we sign a labor contract, and we're bound to it.
Yeah,
they sign a labor contract, and all you have to do is say, bankruptcy. Never mind.
Yeah, yeah. This is apropos of a conversation from the first hour where we were talking with Julio about how the Sackler family and Purdue Pharma look like they're going to declare bankruptcy to get out of, you know, all these families of people that they killed suing them. And PGE is another for-profit corporation is going to do the same thing because apparently their lack of good maintenance on their power lines led to the Paradise Fire that killed some 70 or 80 people.
And they probably got $1 billion in the bank too.
Yeah, I don't know, but you know, and then the airlines, and this is a song that we've heard from more than one airline over the years, basically using the bankruptcy laws. Not to get out of liabilities, consumer liabilities, but to screw their employees, to get out of employee liabilities like pensions and labor contracts. Spot on, Gary. Thank you very much. I mean, these are things that we really should be paying attention to, right? These are the games that corporate America plays. This is how corporate America essentially steals from working people. And it's been going on in a really, really aggressive fashion ever since Ronald Reagan legalized much of it and encouraged all of it. And there's been very, very little oversight. And, you know, it's time for a change. It's time to wake up and take our country back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And that starts with taking our economy back. And that starts with changing the rules on which our economy is built. And welcome back. Luke, watching us in Spokane, Washington on YouTube. Hey, Luke, what's on your mind?
Hey, Tom. Hey, thanks for taking my call. I appreciate
it. My pleasure.
You know, it's so interesting, all of this talk about climate change. what type of technologies that we have literally sitting in our hands that could change everything, you know, solar, wind. I think that that's actually the future. It obviously is the future because we've got, you know, electric cars now that are becoming pretty mainstream. But it really begs the question when I hear all these climate deniers talk. I mean, what have you ever heard? Do you know about thorium, a form of uranium?
Yeah, if you're talking about the thorium reactors, I'm familiar with that, yeah.
Yeah, well, my concern is, you know, we've had this technology, at least possible access to it, for, you know, while they were actually working on the nuclear technology in World War II. Yeah. And we stopped in the 1970s with thorium that is apparently much more efficient. There's 4,000 times, it's 4,000 times more abundant than the uranium that we use now. And I guess if we were able to actually harness that technology, then we'd have tens of thousands of years of clean energy. Now, that's the point, though, is that if we have access to that energy, why are we not using it? And in my mind, I think at the best thing that ever came to our planet came today. I don't think we would use it. I think there are too many powerful people in government that just want to use oil and coal. Yeah. You know, we've got 10 years. Every 10 years, we need to find a new Saudi Arabia. We've got, coal that is only going to last till 2088. But it just seems all about the now.
Yeah. I'm all in favor of nuclear power. We've got this nuclear fusion power plant 93 million miles away from us that is pouring enough energy on Earth that in several hours, if we could efficiently collect it, we could provide the entire planet's year-long energy needs. There is pretty much no place in the United States that couldn't use either solar or wind or a combination of both to produce all of their energy needs. There are some places where storage becomes a real substantial problem, particularly during the winter months, but there are a whole variety of solutions for that even go beyond electronic batteries, you know, the things like, you know, pump up hydro and stuff like that. So,
absolutely.
So there are lots and lots, which, by the way, we've been doing forever with local water supplies. The reason you got a water tower up there that you know, everybody looks at the water tower up there. The reason why water towers are at the altitude that they are is because that defines the water pressure. Rather than having pumps continuously running to pump water into our homes, the pumps pump the water up to the water tower, and then gravity creates the force to push it down. Then the higher the tower is, the more water pressure you get. It's all measurable. We could, you know, variations of that could be used as storage systems for electricity, only when it comes down, instead of going into people's homes, it's spinning a turbine. Or it could spin a turbine on the way down to go into people's homes. I mean, there is
exactly.
So much we can do. Luke, thanks a lot.
Hey, I wanted to, can I bring up one more little point?
Quick, you got 10 seconds.
Yeah, Meghan McCain talking about how, climate change is in the top, not even on the top 30 list, but she's talking to Jay Inslee, you know, when he's running for president. It blows my mind how ignorant, wealthy, relatively smart people can be.
I'm with you. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Paul in Woodinville, Washington. Hey, Paul, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Well, you had a caller last hour. His name was Brian. He was from the Midwest. He was an electrician and said he was a common sense kind of guy.
Mm-hmm.
I thought I would talk a little common sense because he said he just didn't think there was any way to not have a traditional reserve of energy like nuclear or fossil fuels, because in the Midwest, in the summertime, it gets so flipping hot, everybody starts running their air conditioners. And, you know, that's a big drain on the power grid. And I thought, and why does it get so hot?
Right, exactly.
Because there's too much flipping energy, right?
Yeah, there's too much sun. Right, heat is energy.
In other words, did you folks ever tell you, close the door, we're not heating the out-of-doors, right?
Right, right, or
can
cooling
you
it in the summer.
Do you think there is enough nuclear and enough fossil fuels in this country to heat the Midwest to 90-plus degrees?
Yeah.
Summertime?
Yeah.
There's not enough. No. In other words, all the energy is already there.
Yep.
But what do? We keep start burning more energy to pump some of that energy out of our house.
Right.
When there's already enough energy right there.
That's an excellent point, Paul.
Wish I'd thought of it when he was on the phone. What do? Well, we take the water that falls down the dams and creates hydroelectric power, and we ship it to California and Arizona on the Bonneville wholesale market, and then we sell it to the retailers like Enron, who remember the phone calls that were the recordings, how they're going to F grandma and charge her through the nose.
Right.
And I think there's enough energy, heat energy down there, too, you know, to pump the heat out of their houses. But here's the other thing. When you think about it, when you burn fossil fuels, you are wasting 90% of the hours of ancient sunlight in heat.
Yeah.
And the same thing with nuclear. Nuclear power plants are just gigantic water boilers, as are coal plants. They're gigantic water boilers, and you have to cool them off. In other words, nuclear is not, it's highly prolific, but it's not efficient.
Right. In fact, that's why they have to be seated near bodies of water so that they can cool them off. And there's this enormous amount of wastewater that comes out of them that then destroys local ecosystems.
Exactly. When people think that, no, they're wasting most of the energy. But if you go solar, you can't waste any. You might not be able to capture it all because your technology has not been vested enough to scoop it all up.
Right.
But the same thing, he said, oh, and then the thunderstorms come, and boy, there's a whole lot more energy there, too.
That's right. That's wind power. Amen. Paul, thank you. That's brilliant. I it was just absolutely brilliant. Mike in Salem, Oregon, listening to 100.7 FM. Hey, Mike, what's up?
How's it going, Tom?
Good. What's on your mind?
I get property, vacation property at Central Oregon, Lake Billy Chinook. All them beautiful cabins are on solar panels.
Is that because they're off the grid?
Batteries off the grid, charging the battery house. The cable comes out off of the batteries, goes to a breaker panel in the cabin. And they have backup generators that are on propane, but, 30 gallons will last a whole year.
Yep. There you go.
And how come every house isn't its own power plant?
Right, or at least a community. I mean, why not do it at the level of the block, right, the neighborhood, and just wire everybody together and, you know, so that there's some kind of balance there. And, I mean, this is again, it's not rocket science. This is like 1960s technology that they don't want to do now. Mike, well said. Thank you. Earl, listening on Sirius XM in Ypsilanti, Michigan. Earl, the last minute's yours. What's up?
Well, I live in it. See, I'm driving in Miami right now. I just came through the Keys. Climate change is here. I just want to make a simple statement. You had a caller that was concerned about the cost of the Green New Deal.
Yeah.
And anyone that is concerned about that, the point needs to be made. There is no economy on a dead planet, and we have no planet B. So you have a wonderful day, Tom, and thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome, Earl. I think you said it, and you said it very well. And beyond that, the real big lesson that we need to educate so-called conservatives, who are really just shills for industry, right? They're shills for the fossil fuel industry, the coal industry, the nuclear industry, pick your industry. They're just shills. But the poor people who listen to them and who listen to their front men who go on TV as panelists on news shows, the thing that we need to educate them about is that these are not expenses. They are investments. If we invest in a Green New Deal, not only do we put millions of people to work, but we build an energy infrastructure that will produce electricity and thus power an economy well into the future and will produce a return on that investment that is probably not even 10 times or 100 times. It might be 1,000 times the original investment in terms of the return. Thanks so much for being with us today. We'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place. In the meantime, don't forget, democracy is not a spectator sport. As Barack Obama used to say, as Bernie Sanders used to say, it's not a spectator sport. It requires you. So please, get out there, get active. There's so many things, so many ways that we can all pitch in. Tag, you're it. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit TomHartman.com.